Don't wanna be you. Don't wanna be just like you.
Good Charlotte.
Podcast from the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode 320, a thing I forgot to do on 319. And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we're still in our hotel room.
Having snacks.
Yeah. But we did leave before this recording.
We went and played some stuff.
That's correct.
It is now Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
We ran around and played some more games that we're going to talk about. Last night, though, we went out with a bunch of old guests of the show and new pals and got some food, and it was really great. One of the things, obviously, we love about these shows is running into familiar faces. And we had a great time. It was really cool to see everyone. We ate some pizza.
Lost our voices.
I was kind of nervous.
Because I'm a pro.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. I was nervous last night going to bed that it was not going to come back.
Oh, yeah.
However, I woke up and I was fine.
Yeah, I was sick as a dog.
You guys both sounded rough this morning, I will tell you. We were sitting at breakfast and I was like, I'm not sure these guys aren't real sick right now.
Yeah. I feel okay, though.
I might be patient zero this year.
Yeah.
Might be.
We'll find out. I'm not sure yet.
I'm glad I'm eating this cookie with you right now.
I broke off a piece.
Yeah.
You
know. Of that cookie
thing. Broke a piece of that cookie off, girl.
Break me off a piece of
that cookie treat.
Yes. So let's talk about some games. What did you guys play?
There's a game we played yesterday, actually, that we did not get a second to talk about. Okay, good. That was a good hand gesture. Okay.
I forgot.
Called Light Fingers. It was in the indie mega booth. It was a board game, a kind of procedurally built board game, where you played as a thief working for the Thieves Guild to collect loot and bring it back to the Thieves Guild runner, the guy who ran the Thieves Guild.
Kind of felt like Mario Party-esque.
It felt like Mario Party. It looked like if you ever played, what's a good example? Maybe the, what was that rotating puzzle game on iOS that was really beautiful?
Monument Valley?
Monument Valley. It had like a vibe of that, sort of. Like, it was very
like a minimalist, like kind of shaded, shaded objects,
characters, and stuff. Like the board flipped over as you were moving through it. Everything kind of opened up like a puzzle box, and it was really visually. I found it really
like
awesome.
A pop-up book.
Yeah, like a pop-up book. That's a really good example.
Yeah,
They had some really cool board game mechanics. You actually rolled die with like your
Joy-Con.
You shook your Joy-Con and it had a hand that rolled dice.
That's cool.
And then your moves were all kind of based off that dice roll, and then there was a bunch of stuff to do in the game. The thing I think I'm sort of talking around is that by a bunch of stuff, I mean that there was a new rule anytime anything happened in the game, the guy would lean in who was running it was like, okay, well, when that shows up, that means that you can either do this or this, and then this might happen.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was watching you guys play, and I was very confused, but I'm assuming playing was a little bit less confused
than
watching.
I think if we were to play the game again, that we would be A-okay.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. I think it's a few playthroughs.
Yeah, but I think it's a super cool party game.
Yeah.
The thing that is sort of the interesting twist on the game is that it's all turn-based.
Yeah.
Unless you stop on a square that contains a dungeon, and then at the end of that turn, anyone on a dungeon square goes into a dungeon, and it becomes a real-time kind of like 3D platformer where you are trying to reach the end of the dungeon in order to get the loot that you need in order to win or to end the game. And each of the other characters that you're playing against control these like hands that can manipulate all of the traps and the environmental hazards in the dungeon while you're playing. So it kind of creates this, you know, this free for all where like the other people are doing things too.
Right.
If there are like coins on the floor of the dungeon, you can instead use your disembodied hand to steal the coins from the player that's running the dungeon.
Oh, cool.
So like there was a turn in which the other three players in the game went into separate dungeons, and I just took my hand and collected all the coins like while they were trying to fight through the hazards.
Very cool.
And that was my strategy for doing that.
Yeah, my take on it was that It's for Switch, too, which I don't think we said. Sorry. This is built for Switch.
Yep, built for Switch.
We used it on four different Joy-Cons as a four-player game, mm-hmm. which was really fun, and I could see it being a really fun way to play a quick board game without having to, like, learn and set up a board game, because you do kind of learn it as you're going if you'd never played it before.
Yeah.
I think that it's... The thing that caught me is that it is, I think, built by a very small team, and that's where some of the, like, when we're talking through, like, oh, there's a lot of depth is a nice way of saying there's a ton of rules. There's, like, some balanced stuff I felt like that I was like, oh, because you don't really need to go to the dungeons. You could just steal gold. Like, the game could seemingly be killed pretty quick. I mean, although we played the short version of the game, it seemed like you could get through it pretty quickly without even exploring some of the things that were available, because there's just so much there that you could kind of.
But the thing that, I think the thing that we accidentally skip by at the end of the game is that the game ends when a certain player collects the specified number of loot and returns them to the guild.
Right.
But at that point, you don't necessarily win the game. They kind of create a tally of your activities in the game, which includes getting the loot, but also doing other things as well. So it's possible that you can end the game and then someone else can win just because they attempted to do more stuff.
But you got, like, points for stealing. I never got any cards, which my playthrough was very dry. Like, he got, like, a bunch of cards that he could, like, alter how he was playing the game. And, like, I just literally walked over, like, 20 tiles and picked up gold. That was about, like, all my real game experience was. Yeah. So I thought it was really fun. I thought it looked gorgeous. I could see it being really entertaining with a group of people on the Switch.
Right. Agreed.
My quick question before we move on, because we got a lot to talk about. Is there stuff to do when it's not your turn? Because a lot of times these turn-based multiplayer games, they become three other people are looking at their cell phones while one person's playing, and they look, kind of are brought back in.
If everybody rolled a six, which is like the biggest roll you can have, you would probably have like 5 minutes of just downtime.
Yeah, there's not a lot for you to do when it's not your turn.
See, that's a lot. That's a lot. Okay,
the same thing happens like when we would play D&D. Oh, yeah, we have big groups.
Sure.
You would draw, and then you would draw, and like somebody else is looking at their phone, and like two people are having a side chat, and I'm just like dealing with one person at the moment.
Yeah, it's challenging.
So
it's that's hard to do.
I liked it.
I did.
Yeah. I liked it.
I did like it too. Okay. Yeah.
I liked the logo branding quite a lot. It looked like Lightfingers. It sounded like an old like a ska band or something.
I really don't want this to be left off as if I think our 10-minute playthrough was somehow indicative of like a terrible game. It was really fun.
It was cool.
And like it looked amazing. It looked super gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I would absolutely recommend it, especially if you find yourself with your friends around your Switch a lot. This is like tailor made for two to four people to sit around and play this game.
Excuse me.
This morning I played Star Control Origins.
For 4 hours.
I did play for quite a long time. because no one was trying to push me out of the way. I just kept playing. So it was great. Star Control was sort of one of those games that as a kid, it like really showed me, especially Star Control 2, how powerful and amazing video games could be. Star Control 2 was one of those games that had, especially as a kid, there were so many different systems and it was so incredibly fun. It was about space exploration and had branching dialogue, and it was in a lot of ways I think the precursor to the Mass Effect franchise, which, you know, as our listeners know, is one of our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So recently there's been a lot of legal issues with Star Control. The rights were sold to Star Control, and the original creators of Star Control are making their own version of Star Control, but the people that purchased the rights of Star Control are making this Star Control Origins.
Yeah.
I've
seen some about this, and it's kind of amazing
to
me.
Both games are allowed to be called Star
Control. Well, the one that's made by the original creators isn't being called Star Control anymore, but it's essentially Star Control.
Interesting.
Yeah, I believe the audience at large is calling it Star Control still.
So people are hip to what's going on.
Yeah, people are hip to what's going on.
So this is the Star Control created by the people that bought the rights to Star Control. Like, in their defense, were huge fans of Star Control.
Yeah.
Got it, okay.
So, I played both the single player and the multiplayer versions. The single player drops you in command of it being Origins. This story takes place before the other Star Control games.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about first alien contact. So you're in our solar system, and you encounter a crashed alien ship on one of the moons, I think off of Neptune, perhaps. And you encounter this alien. You do some branching dialogue. It's really funny and quirky. Star Control's kind of light. The aliens are a little silly. Not like stupid silly, but like a little like Jim Henson.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
So you encounter these aliens. He's like, hey, I'm escaping these alien overlords. You need to find parts of my ship. And then it sends you around the rest of our solar system, basically in a tutorial looking for ship parts. You can land in Lander and explore these planets and pick up the ship parts and help your alien friend. And then eventually drones who are looking for the crashed alien ship come after you and you get to fight them.
Is this like real-time combat?
So yeah, the combat kind of shifts back and you fight in an overhead view that uses real-time physics similar to Asteroids.
Oh, okay.
So
cool.
Yeah, so you're looking, I guess it's what's third-person overhead view of the... Third-person overhead view?
Sure.
Isometric?
Yeah, I don't know, got it. Way. Makes sense.
Yeah, so you're a tiny little ship, but you have a number of special abilities. And as you progress through the game, you recruit different aliens, and all the alien ships have different abilities. And you can use them in different combat scenarios in these, like, kind of fast-paced, arcadey kind of battles. It's super cool. Fun, very strategic. You can get, like, actually better, almost like a fighting game with particular ships.
Right.
So once you learn their strategies and how they excel against other ship types, you can kind of fly around and kick ass with them, which is really fun.
Nice.
So I played the single player for a while. I felt like the dialogue was pretty good. I felt like the branching dialogue choices were cool. Landing on planets was a little bit lackluster to me. It was like you landed and can basically just drive around in a rover and like pick up ore and stuff, and then you can take off and bring your ore back to your ship.
Hmm.
Very similar to Mass Effect.
Yeah.
I feel like Mass Effect may have borrowed heavily from this game. Then I played the multiplayer, which actually lets you test out, I think I tested out maybe 10 of the different alien ships. Cool. Each one has a primary and secondary ability, because it is, you know, battles are fast-paced, you know, 1 or 2 minutes each. And it has, like, a versus mode where you can, you know, grab as many ships as you want. They are each worth a certain number of points, so you build a team based on points, and you face off against either a human opponent or a AI opponent.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then you go head-to-head in these battles with all these different ships. It's really cool. I could tell there was some weird stuff. It being Origins, it didn't use any of, like, the aliens from the original Star Control, but, like, a lot of the ships were very reminiscent of, like, the older ships from other games, but with, like, different names and, like, just a different look to them.
Huh.
So I don't know if that was intentional or if they're, like, trying to avoid, like, using, like, the name Shofixi for, like, legal purposes or something.
Sure.
There's, like, a lot of the terminology was just, like, tweaked, which is someone who played Star Control 2 1,000 times. I'm like, why isn't this guy just called what he's supposed to be called?
Yeah.
Anyway, I was pretty impressed with it. I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the overall narrative is like, you know, where the story takes you. I hope they kind of go all in. The first game just had, like, I don't know, a ton of exploration. I remember playing it, like, all summer, one summer, until I finally got to the end. So,
amazing.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
But, seems like you've got your time cut out for you between this game and the Rebel Galaxy game.
Yeah, a lot of, lot, like, of space fun.
Yeah, space fun for you.
Good times. What about you guys?
Let's see. Where was I? I think I went up to the 6th floor. And I found a game called Retimed from, I believe, Swiss Games. Did you play this game?
No.
So it was a Switch title that was a 4-player kind of like 2D shooter, like a little arena shooter. But what was cool about it is that it was fast-paced. Every time a bullet entered your kind of like zone of you being attacked, like time slowed down around you, which was kind of neat. So you had kind of a moment to do something about it. So if you can imagine, like, a Smash Brothers type environment where you were shooting at each other with colorful cartoon characters, and you kind of had, like, a split second to actually get away from the gunfire, which kind of created an interesting strategy over if it were just a traditional, you know, like, kind of 2D shooty kind of game.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, like, oh, maybe instead of firing one bullet, I should fire 3 in an arc so that they wouldn't, you know, even if they jumped away, they would still get hit by something, right? So I kind of turned a Twitch shooter into, like, a puzzle game where it's like, how do I catch this person in a corner so that I can actually score a point on them? And then you also didn't have unlimited bullets, so you'd have to travel around the different platforms on the level to collect more ammo so that you could attack. And then you also had some, like, cool movement mechanics, like a wall grapple and a dash and a slide, all to help you kind of get out of danger. So I played just one round of it. I'm assuming there's a little bit more to it than just that, but again, it seems like maybe a theme of this con is that there are just a lot of indie games coming out for Switch.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that obviously didn't happen on the Wii, but you're really starting to see You know, when even when it's a multi-platform game, like the game I feel like the console that I feel like that is being shown on the floor is always this Switch is the platform.
I'm like surprised by it sometimes too. I'll be holding like a Switch Pro controller and not know it.
Right.
And I'll be like, wait a second, what control is this? And I'll look and I'm like, oh, I'm on a Switch right now. Like,
yeah.
You just didn't even realize that you're playing on a Switch because they're not demoing it on the Switch itself.
Yeah. And I think that was part of what, you know, maybe what drew me to this game, because I was like, oh, it's another Switch title. Let me see what that is. And that was the same thing with Light Fingers as well, another Switch title. Yeah. So that was retimed.
I went by the Sony booth and I sat down and played Dreams. Which is the new one from the creators of
Little Big Planet.
And this one is very different, vastly different from probably just about anything on the floor, because essentially what the game is, what Dreams is a set of tools to build games inside of the PlayStation 4. So from what I gather, there is no game around it. You just literally get this creator tool to make whatever games you want, and you put them onto their platform, and they you know, get remarketed out to people, and people can download your game and play whatever you made. What was mind-blowing about it was, I'm going to run through really quickly the six different titles I played. First one I loaded up was, I'm not going to remember all the names, they were all very random names. First one I loaded up was a 3D space shooter, like in the vein of Star Fox or something. You were in this ship, and I was flying around, and I was firing on like little TIE fighter enemies that were flying around. And I was trying to defeat them all, and I was defending my space station. So I'm doing this whole thing, and I'm shooting, and it's crazy. There's, like, you know, sideswipe moves and barrel rolls and stuff. So I finished doing that, beat all the enemies, and then it's like, want to play a different game? I'm like, sure. I load up the next one. The next one was called Please Hug Me, and it was this little blobby character, a little boxy character with two arms, and then a bunch of triangle things. It was clearly like a physics demo.
Yeah.
And you were just run. You would run at the triangle cone things, and they would fall off the edge of the platform that you were on while you were trying to hug all of them.
Yeah.
And you never actually were capable of hugging them, or maybe you were, and I just was very bad at it. The third one was a top-down twin stick style space shooter where you're going over this base and killing all the platform guns that it had, and it was very like was it R-Type or what am I thinking of? Was that
the like name a of Gradius this? Or something?
Yeah. So it was very much in that vein. I played that, and then the next one I lit up was a what was the fifth one? There was another one that I don't remember playing right now off the top of my head. The last one I lit up is a text-based adventure, where you're at a party and then you get eaten by a demon, and it's all text. It's just choosing text out of it. Cool. It was the best one out of all the demos. And I had just started like figuring out how to beat it, because it's this weird like time loop where you keep getting eaten by a demon, and every time you get eaten, you have to like figure out how to like do something more correctly the next time, and you have all your memories, so you'll find out like the code to a door, and then you'll go back and you can go back to where that door was and get in, and all this stuff like just kept shifting and changing, and it was really good. And I finished it, and I was like, man, that's kind of crazy. Like, the games were all vastly different. Like, none of them were even kind of the same.
Yeah.
And she was like, I was like, the text-based one was really good. She goes, yeah, apparently it takes an hour to beat. That there's that many branching lines inside of the game. She said one guy beat it on the floor, and he had 45 minutes. He was just by himself playing. It was like one of the people that was like after hours or something.
Yeah.
And they sat there and played for 45 minutes and managed to either beat it or just get to the point where he was gonna beat it, but they had to like leave.
Wow.
And I was like, Jesus. Like, so this system, then I watched a little bit of the demo of them making a game, and they made just kind of this like fun little thing where it's like a blobby octopus talking to this other things, but the tools are seemingly like, if there are limits, I don't know what they are. They, like, these games all looked totally different, they all played differently, the controls were different. It was really kind of astonishing, the amount of things you could put in it.
For a way to teach game development.
It does. It seems heavily like that.
Yeah, and that's pretty awesome and pretty ambitious. I mean, what I know about Little Big Planet is that eventually people got so creative with their submissions. The store that you could download Little Big Planet downloads was just insane. With you know, hundreds of thousands of different things you could download. I'm hoping that's the case with this as well. And because once this gets in the hands of the community, if the tools seem user-friendly enough, you're going to see some really cool stuff.
Yeah. You know? So they weren't demoing the tools for me. Like, I couldn't use the tools to make anything on the floor. I
watched them do it on stage.
But I was watching them do it on stage. Yeah. It was super interesting. It looked pretty usable. I mean, it depends on how they manage that notion of not being, you know, it's okay for me to play seven different games, get seven different experiences and think, man, this is limitless. It's a different thing to go into the tool and think, I don't even know where to begin because there's so many things that you could create. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, hopefully they figure out how to train you and challenge that down. But it was super interesting. I would highly, I don't have PS4, but I would definitely be looking at it if I was going to get one. So.
I would hope that they somehow made a single player experience that was like a really fun, a tutorial that was actually fun that showed you how to work the game.
Yeah, hopefully. That's all in the tool set. There doesn't seem to be any kind of single player thing for Dreams as like a playthrough, like a game they made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's all going to be tool set and you building and then creating.
It reminds me
storefront.
Of like Project Spark, like that thing that Xbox, Microsoft tried to do.
I remember that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like at the beginning of the Xbox One cycle.
Yeah.
You have anything? You want me to do one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Matt and I played Killer Queen Black, which is a console version of the console and PC version of the arcade hit. Killer Queen is a super popular arcade barcade title that is typically a 8-player or it's a 10-player experience in the arcade. Which is crazy because if you've never seen a Killer Queen cabinet, it is gar fucking gantuan.
Yeah.
It is like literally takes up a whole room, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, true.
But the mechanics behind Killer Queen is you play a bunch of bees, like anthropomorphic bees or like humanoid bees, that are trying to take these eggs and deliver them to the hive. Some players play as workers, some players play as the queen. There's a couple ways to win. You can either deliver the eggs, you can kill the queen, or you can ride the snail.
Yeah, Killer Queen three times.
Yes, three times. Killer Queen Black has some additions. You can now get different weapon types. There was like a mace and a sword, and I believe a spear. The levels were also
there was like
different.
Drone speed ups. Like there were
yeah, there was a lot of different
things
cool
do.
Little things. The game's really strategic, and it sounds so dumb because the general gameplay for those of you listening at home is sort of like an advanced version of Joust.
Yes,
with super similar physics where you're like you can flap by pressing the jump button. And basically, you know, you can knock out other players by jumping on their head or eating them with a snail or stabbing them with your lance.
Yeah.
But you're trying to deliver these eggs, but you and the rest of the people on your team, who are all real players, have to come up with how are we going to win this? Are we going to try and ride the snail? Are we going to try and kill the queen? Or are we going to try and deliver the eggs? If you try and do any of those strategies, you have to kind of delegate responsibilities between the different players. Like, is one player going to try and guard your own hive? Are you going to go after the enemy hive and try and block them from delivering... delivering the berries. Were they berries or eggs?
They were berries.
Berries.
Yeah.
You sound insane when you describe this game.
Nuts.
But I've seen it also
it
in person.
It was so much fun. Like it was
it's really
insanely
fun.
And Ash just like mentioned it offhand because we were walking by PAX Rising. And he was like, oh, and I was like, what is that? And you're like, oh, you've never played? And then we walked up for like a minute. And they had no one like crowded to play.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, let's play. So we played. And it... Switch, first of all, it's coming to Switch and console.
Yeah.
And it was just so insanely good. Like, I was like, this is really fun.
How many people could play
eight.
At the same... Eight on console?
Eight on console.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
I played the original in a bar in Baltimore with a bunch of coworkers. And the bar had, like, a league.
Wow.
It's its own esport, and I'm not exaggerating. Like,
no,
it's streamed, and there's people that are, like,
I believe
ranked...
It. Yeah,
but it's such silly fun, and there is a lot of skill to it, a lot of tact to it. So I would say definitely if you're looking for a really kick-ass party game, I would.
Now, we didn't ask like if it's going to be networked play. I've got to imagine it. No one's going to have eight Switch controllers.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Laying
right?
around, so
I mean,
I assume
that
it's going to be networked.
Right?
Yeah, but. But it is winter this year. They said they're going to have it out on Switch. And
nice.
I think it's either already out or coming out on, or maybe the same time on PC. But yeah, it was super, super fun.
Really cool.
Cool.
Killer Queen Black.
Let's see. I have a game that I will talk about called My Memory of Us. It is from, let's see, it says Juggler Games and IMGN.pro. It was in PAX.
Croatian.
In PAX, there was up on the sixth floor, there was kind of like a Polish game developer section booth set up with a
number. Yeah, I think they have like a whole, it's a conglomerate of some sort where all these different Polish and Eastern European companies are together.
First of all the games in that area were like super different looking from each other and from other games on the show floor.
Cool. Yeah, I wandered into the one at East. I talked about one of the games back then. I don't remember which one it was. And talked to one of the guys who's running the booth, and he was like, oh yeah, these guys fly out from, like, they're all here, and it's insane. They're just, like, flying around trying to get these games out there.
To me, it kind of felt like it was even more, like, more niche than going to the Indie Mega Booth.
Yeah.
Where it was like, people know about Indie Mega Booth, but it's like, I think, you know, in a couple of years, people are going to be like, did you go to the Polish Games booth?
Yeah.
Because there's this game over here that you've never heard of before.
Yeah.
It's fucking cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So anyways, I looked at a game called My Memory of Us, and the reason why I was drawn to it is because I'm a big fan of those Limbo-style games where it's kind of like a 2D platforming adventure, but it's more about solving the puzzles than it is about, like, fast, twitchy kind of movements. And so, again, this is sort of a black-and-white game where you play as two characters. They're like children. And the story is being told from the present day, sort of a story being told into the past. The developer told me it was kind of like a... like an allegory, is that the right word that I'm looking for? So I'm assuming it's, you know, dealing with, you know, like World War II subject matter. But it's really cool. It's, you play as these two characters and you can kind of switch between them, like who is the leader of your group. And, you know, one character will give you sort of like ability to move faster. The other one has stealthy ability. And so you kind of need to navigate all these puzzles by manipulating the two characters, which to me also reminds me a little bit of Valiant Hearts, which was kind of like the idea in that game as well, where it's not like a fast-moving game, but it's like a game that makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it just looks really great. And, oh, the thing that he... I didn't play the game because I didn't have time, but he was like, oh, I just want you to listen to one of the cutscenes in the game. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And I put on the headphones as Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I saw the press release for this.
Yeah, and I was like... I was like, how did you get Patrick Stewart for the game? And he's like, well, actually, we asked Ian McClellan to, you know, if he was available. And he said that he, you know, he wasn't, but he was really interested in the project. And he would, you know, he'd definitely help us out in any way that we could. And then they were like, well, could you hook us up with Patrick Stewart then? And he was like, oh, yeah, sure. That's my friend. And then, like, hooked him up with Patrick Stewart and put in a good word. Patrick was available and was like, yeah, I'll do it.
That's cool.
I love Patrick Stewart. This is a total segue, but these days he's just like, you know what? I'm having fun. I'm just going to do stuff.
Do whatever
Let's do Picard again. Why not?
Yeah. Yep. So he narrates the cutscenes in the game. Again, it's a narrative adventure about two children that are kind of like fighting together against like sort of a very like dark and oppressive time. And again, being told, you know,
you can say Nazis because those are Nazis.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I mean, it doesn't say it on the flyer, and you know, he did describe the game as more of like an allegory, so there might be kind of like metaphors for those concepts,
right,
in the game.
Yeah. That's definitely a Nazi helmet on that guy.
I believe that is the idea. Yes, but there is some talk of robots and stuff on the flyer.
Oh, okay.
So I think the story
might be a little fantastic.
I think when somebody's retelling the tale of their experiences, it might be embellished in a different way.
Okay.
But anyway, that game is called My Memory of Us. I believe that I think it's coming Xbox, PS4 this year, and I think Switch later next year. It's going to be a multi-platform release.
Cool.
Check it out.
You guys want to do Anthem?
Let's do it.
Don't want to be you.
Oh,
don't want to be just like you.
What the hell is that? Good Charlotte?
Good Charlotte.
Put your hands up. I watched them live recently.
Did you really?
Awful.
Oh.
They were at WWDC a year ago, and I wanted to not
be there. We should cut the Good Charlotte.
Yeah. Five seconds. We can use 5 seconds of it.
Right? We can use 5 seconds.
Well, I felt like you were parodying it. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So we're good. We don't need to put the music in because you sang it.
Yeah.
So true. This Anthem panel, as I think a lot of people may have already seen this on Twitch at this point, but it was really, I think the focus of the panel was, it was called like Our World, Your Story. And I think what they were really trying to emphasize was sort of like how they transition like what you already know about BioWare to like a shared multiplayer universe.
Right. Which I think is a lot of players' concerns. Like, you know, realistically, like, we, as a podcast, we talked about BioWare stuff a whole heck of a lot. And we even tossed around ideas in the early days of having, like, a BioWare-centric podcast where we talk specifically about, like, let's do a Mass Effect show or what have you. And granted, that never happened, but for the first couple years of the show, this is really... You know, we talked about it a hell of a lot. So,
yeah.
We care a lot about BioWare, and we like the stuff that they put out quite a bit. So it's interesting. This is new territory for them, and I feel like a lot of people feel the same way we do. It's a little, since it's so different, people are a little like, well, what does this mean? Which is, like you said, I think that was the focus of this panel, was to say, well, here's what the game means. Here's what we're trying to do. So I think the panel was really... they tried to emphasize that there is going to be a single-player narrative experience.
Yes.
They kind of explained how that was going to take place. You have a hub world. You have various contacts that are from different factions that you can deal with and go on missions for. You have a crew of NPCs that kind of will support you in your adventures along the way, that all have different motivations and different arcs, from what I understood from the panel. Yep. So you'll have all these people that you encounter. Everybody playing the single player portion of the game is going to have the same crew, the same NPCs. They're all part of the hub world. Where the game differentiates from other BioWare titles is the fact that now you can go through and play the single player experience, and when your friends get on, you guys can get on and do missions together that are not part of that single player experience. Made it sound like, I'm not 100% sure, but that you cannot run the single player missions with four players.
No.
I think
you can run them with at least one.
At least one.
But they didn't say more than one. But they did not say more than one.
Yes. But this is where the confusion lies. Because I feel like I'm okay at understanding video games.
Yeah.
A hard time exactly figuring out what you can play when.
And it may have been the intention behind what they were trying to say to people. I think they were trying to say that, like, your single player story is your own. But there is an opportunity to get support from your friends if you want to allow them to drop into your game and play.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate here, but any video game I play is my own. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's all my own narrative.
I mean, I think the point is that, like, the single player story is yours, and people that come into your game can't influence that.
Yes,
I think that's what they were trying to, like, convey to the audience.
So they also said during the panel, this is where we're finally hashing this out. While we're recording, they said on the panel that other players can't influence your dialogue choices.
Correct.
In the single player narrative,
but all that stuff is back at the hub, and I think the hub world is only single player.
So your party splits up when you get to the...
I think the way it works is that, like, when you are playing the single player game,
yes,
the hub world, I believe, is yours alone.
Yes.
And then when you...
Other players are not there.
Right. And when
no one's breakdancing.
I believe that's the case.
Emoting.
I believe that's the case. And then it sounds like when you go out into a mission, you can allow somebody to come into that mission with you to help you finish it. But it is your game, not theirs.
So, here's where I think that's problematic, and I don't have an answer. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, that means every time you say you guys are... Let's say we want to run a story mission together. We'll go out together into the world, do the story mission. The group will split up when we get back to the hub world. We'll do our dialogue options of our own single player experiences, and then have to reform the group to go back out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. I would assume that they want people to, when they're doing multiplayer, to sort of be in the open world together and do, like, the kind of, like, the more traditional, like, multiplayer-y type missions together.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that is a good question, is how, if you do want to play the story with friends, how does that work? We're not exactly sure, but it does sound like there's a way for you to join in with other people and do that somehow, but we don't know.
For those wondering what game we're talking about, I think we
did we say Anthem?
I think we said Anthem, but it is a third-person multiplayer shooter with an RPG elements with aerial combat involved as well. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's reminiscent of something like... Destiny with jetpacks, yeah. Multiple classes, four or five.
Four classes.
Yeah.
I believe it is PvE only right now.
Yeah.
I kind of hope it stays that way.
So what... Let's help old man Matt out for a second.
Okay.
We throw these PvE and these PvP things around all the time. And I just go like, uh-huh. Because I don't want to look like an idiot when I'm standing there with you guys and other people.
Right.
I played, I'm going to calculate, about 1.5 minutes of Destiny before I thought, this game's not for me, and then never turned it on again.
Right.
What is PvP in Destiny versus PvE? Because the only things I ever played were like... fucking things where I went out and shot what I thought were not other players in the world.
Well, Destiny had a PvP option where once you get to a certain point in the story, you can go into essentially death matches with other players, team death matches with other players.
Oh.
And some of the rewards you can carry over and use in either your PvP or PvE.
Or it'd be like the Division's Dark Zone, where it's like a shared world, like fighting.
So the Dark Zone's PvP, but the rest of the world was PvE.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're not doing
I thought PvE was like
player versus environment.
Yeah. Oh, environment.
Yeah. So here's, okay.
I had everyone in my head.
No, so listen, like, here's the point. Here's the point of this, and this is why I think it's important, is that with a multiplayer game, a game that has a PvP component, you have to balance the weapons.
Right.
And they have to be, and they have to almost have like a rock, paper, scissors kind of situation going on.
Sure.
So, because you'll get to a point where everybody's using the same thing, and that happens in Division, I think it happens in Destiny as well.
Sure, yeah, for sure.
But when you make a game that's PvP only, you can create weapons that
PvE
are... PvE only. Yeah. You can create weapons that are fun. And that reminds me more of Borderlands 2, when they could just make up a weapon, give it a stupid-ass name, and say that this fires fart bullets.
Yeah.
And you can just run into the game and be like, look, I got the fart bullet gun.
And right. Everyone would be like, rad, because we're all on the same team. Please use the fart bullet gun.
Right. So I'm kind of excited at the prospect of having, like, a game that is more lighthearted. Of course, it's going to be challenging. But, like, you could have fun weapons. You could do a super challenging mission and get, like, a giant golden weapon that fires, like, unicorns or something. And, like, that's okay. And I'm kind of hoping that the game doesn't have as much of that edge that, like, a game like The Division does, or that, right, you know, that Destiny does.
I mean, I think that's a nice desire. Everything I got from this panel was that this world's going to be fucking heavy and bleak.
Yeah.
How many times in the panel did they go, don't worry, every character has their own set of traumas and problems that they're coming from, so that you can deal with them and talk to them like they're a real human. And I wanted to be like, every conversation I have is not about somebody's trauma that they're dealing with currently. Like,
yeah.
Like, it just seems like the game's going to be real fucking heavy, and that something, you know, catastrophic happened, and they created these freelancers, and then all these, or they were already there, and they got broken up, and now they're redoing them.
Oh.
And, like, it's just going to clearly be a lot of dark and heavy shit, right, is what it felt like to me.
I just think that's, I think they're trying to kind of, like, ease the fears of an audience that is used to having games where they can establish meaningful connections with the characters and then potentially romance them.
Right.
And I think they're trying to make the connection for those fans to say, like, hey, it's not going to be the same game, but yes, you will be able to get to know these people and, like, and feel, like, have feelings about them.
Yeah.
But
I also get a little worried with this notion of free play. It seems interesting that you can just float around a world, but, like, I don't, like, it just seems like a lot of different games, and I don't understand which ones are the important ones yet.
Right.
And I'm not sure which ones are the ones that, like, I'm going to enjoy yet, because it's like, you can just go fly around and find holes. And I'm like, okay, like, why? Like, they said that a few times, and I'm like, I get that there's a whole group of gamers that want that. They want to just explore and, like, see all these different worlds and stuff. Right. That's interesting to them, and that's great, but for me, I'm like, but do I have to? Do I have to, like, just spend 2 hours flying around with no goal in sight, like, to see what I see? Yeah. And then there was multiplayer, where we're gonna have, like, tightly knit multiplayer missions where you can go and you'll get instanced, you'll fight, you'll do all this shit, will be cool. That sounds fun, like, cool. But then there's, like, single player, and I'm like, man, there's a lot going on inside of this game. And if there's a company that's gonna harness all of that, I'm sure BioWare is fully capable of being one of those companies.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like, I'm like, what are we making? Like, what are we going for in this moment? Because it felt confused.
It's very tricky, too, because I feel like more and more players these days do not necessarily want to co-op with strangers, because of the toxic environment that the internet has sort of become in the last 5 or 6 years. So that's challenging. We have a PvE game, and you're encouraging players to group up with players using, you know, Group Finder or what have you. It's going to be interesting, and a lot of companies in recent years have gone to great lengths to, like, encourage players to play fairly with one another, and so on and so forth. But most of those are in PvP games. So, you know, my big fear is, if a lot of the content, we don't know this yet, this is just speculation, if a lot of the content is going to be, like, raid type things where you're going to really be encouraged to have 4 players to go on and tackle these big bosses to get cooler guns and stuff like that, and you're going to have to play with 4 or 3 other strangers in order to complete these tasks. Granted, people do this all the time. They raid with strangers all the time. But a lot of that content becomes gated then, because you need to find those people, and then how, you know, what if I don't really want to play with a stranger? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I, and like, I want to be perfectly clear. I am not rooting for this game to fail or to be bad or anything along those lines. And nor am I thinking that like I know better in any way that, about what they're making than it just feels a lot like I'm going like, I want to be excited. I want to know what I'm excited about. And a lot of it feels like I'm just being sold that this game will be epic, and I just need to move forward with that information and like either trust it or not.
Some more questions to be answered.
Yeah, and
as we move closer.
And I think we, you know, this panel, we did get to see a little bit of footage at the beginning. We heard more of the lore sort of around the different character types and stuff, but like I didn't even know what the names of the character types were walking in, because I don't follow stuff super clearly or closely. So like when they just started launching in on like freelancers and ciphers,
oh, the lore. Yeah,
I just was sitting there going like, I was like literally looking around like I hadn't studied before the test, you know. I was like, oh no, is there a test today? Like, oh god, you know, like trying to figure out if everybody else knew what was going on in the room.
Sure.
So I don't know, it'll be interesting. We're just gonna have to wait and see. It's gonna be a wait and see.
I think
game.
Like honestly, like we can talk about it till our faces turn blue. But here's the real question: is the core gameplay loop going to be fun as hell? Is there going to be a lot of stuff to unlock and a lot of customization and things that are actually accessible along the way? So is there a clear path of progression where you get really cool shit and you get in there and show off your cool guns with your friends, and the gameplay loop is fantastic, then the game's going to be good.
Yep.
You know, all the little things, like, because all these games, you burn through that narrative in, like, a week, you know what I mean? And then you're, like, you're kind of stuck with the Elder game, finger quotes. Is that going to be cool? You know?
Right.
Like, are we going to be able to call each other up and be like, okay, we all have 1 hour. What can we get done in that hour?
Yeah.
Can we have fun in that 1 hour and feel like we did something?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think they're thinking about that. It seems like they've already been thinking about what's going to happen after this game comes out and you finish it. So,
yeah.
I'm optimistic so far.
Me too.
But there are just more things to learn.
I agree. Yeah. Cool. That it for today?
I think that's it for today.
All right, so thank you guys for listening to episode 320 of the Rated NA Podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Please do that. You can send us all an email. That's nerds@nerdappropriate.com. We have Facebook, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And, of course, Mixer and Twitch. You can follow us there as well. And we are now on Spotify, so go ahead. And if you want to listen to old episodes, I feel like that is the easiest way to listen to old ones, because they're all in order and you can just scroll through them.
Fantastic.
Sure. Pretty cool. Thanks again, guys, and we have more packed stuff coming in the next episode.
No. Please continue.
Matt thought of a joke in his head. He's not sharing with us.
Oh, okay.
It's fine. I'll tell you later.
All right.
It's not for podcast.
Okay. So this was
I have a booger, don't I?
That's what it is.